I have
current geek.
Welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm not Scott Johnson. I'm Tom Merritt. Scott Johnson out celebrating his anniversary of a wedding. So because I'm going to be out for a couple of weeks and he was out this week, it would have been quite a long break between Current Geeks. So we decided to do something we have never done before, and that is go solo. I will be piloting the ship for good or ill this week on my own. Next week, Scott will be doing the same on his own. But thankfully, I have wonderful guests to help me out and make things all better, starting with Christy Cates at ChristyCates.com, and of course, host of Monday Music News and so much more. How are you doing, Christy? Well, it's good to have you.
Thank you.
let's try that again because my recording software didn't hear you.
Oh, so, well, all right.
Christy Cates, pretend I didn't say this twice. How are you doing?
Well, look, it's Tom Merritt. My goodness. Hello, Tom Merritt. How are you? I haven't seen you in a long time.
It's good to see you, too.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks for saving me by being here today.
You're quite welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Also contributing on the saving project is Mr. Graham Elwood, host of Comedy Film Nerds, and of course one of the people behind the LA Podfest that's coming up in September. Graham, thanks for being here, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tom. It's exciting. We've had you on Comedy Film Nerds, I think, twice.
Yeah, no, it's been twice now. You're right.
So it's good to return the favor.
And well, we've had Chris on Current Geek once, maybe more. So yeah, we are long overdue in getting you on Current Geek. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
All right, let's start off with this thing that Scott plays sometimes.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
There's a triple threat of Star Wars news here. First, Birth Movie's Death claims that Danny Glover is being considered to be cast as Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo anthology movie. Leaked images of Hasbro toys are also showing a few characters from Rogue One, one called Moroth, who looks a bit like a Wampa, and a lizard-faced character named Commander Pow. Those toys are going to be released September 30th. And finally, a bittersweet third story here. Terminally ill Neil Harvey got a sneak peek at Rogue One, a Star Wars story, on August 20th, thanks to a campaign online and the cooperation of the studio. If you remember, a similar thing happened with The Force Awakens. He got to see it on August 20th, and sadly, Harvey passed away on August 23rd. So, kind of hard to get excited about Hasbro Toys and Lando Calrissian with that last story in there, but these were all voted up on our subreddit. So Christy, with how do you feel about a Danny Glover Lando Calrissian?
Actually, I saw a list of people that are being considered to be Lando, and one of the people that stood out to me was Alfred. I'm going to pronounce his name incorrectly. I think it's Enoch or Enoch. He played Dean Thomas in the Harry Potter movies. So he was one of Ron's sister Ginny's boyfriends, and his facial structure and the way he carries himself looked very much like Lando to me. So I was kind of like in my head campaigning for him. But I don't think Danny Glover's a poor choice at all. I think he's also a good choice for that. I just kind of saw Dean Thomas's face as Alfred Enoch first.
You just had that.
The image.
Graham, where do you come down? Do you have an opinion on that?
I really like Danny Glover as an actor. He's really interesting and stuff like that. My question is, and this is not Danny Glover's fault, it's just Billy Dee Williams played Lando in the Star Wars movie. So Billy Dee Williams was smooth, man. He was slick. You know, he charms Leia when he meets her and he's like, and who's this? And Danny Glover is sort of a working man type actor. You know, he always plays a sort of, you know, everyday guy or sort of he might be in charge. He's authoritative, but he's not smooth. So that's my only question in that is, can he pull that off, or is he just an older Lando? So now he's a little like, if Danny's that's decent casting if it's that way, but.
Yeah, but that wouldn't work out, right? Because it's supposed to be young Han Solo, so it had to be young Lando.
So that's what's confusing to me.
Who is the young Billy Dee Williams, though?
But isn't it Donald Glover?
Oh, yeah, no. Hold on.
Oh, then I'm an idiot. I thought
you're right. I know you're not. I think I said Danny Glover. I've led you astray. It would have to be Donald Glover.
There we go.
Yeah.
That makes
now
sense.
That I've given you the
sense.
Correct information, does it make a difference in your opinion, Graham?
Yeah. Yeah, it does actually. Cause that's, you know,
all right, we've considered Danny Glover. Let's just move on and consider Donald Glover now as a separate issue.
I think that's a great choice. Now that I think about it, I think that could be quite well. I'm trying to bring up his.
He's a guy. Most people probably know him from Community, but he's done a bunch of other great work. I honestly didn't catch that I had said Danny Glover accidentally because I sort of agree that Donald Glover still is more of an everyman because of some of the things he's played. Now he's got a range of roles, so he could do different things, but I don't consider him the smooth Billy D. Williams type. I'm sure he could do it. He's a great actor. But I the reason it didn't catch me that I had said the wrong name is because I still kind of feel that way about Donald Glover.
Well, I think, you know, I think Donald Glover, you know, so he's playing a young Lando Calrissian. I think he's a good young actor. And I think he hasn't really been given the opportunity to play a smooth sort of ladies man type that who Lando was, you know. Lando in the Han Solo world, everybody in the Han Solo world is a little bit shady. You know what I mean? Because that was his world. He was a smuggler, you know, so everyone that he deals with is like card players and grifters and, you know, like, so I actually, now that we've got the right Glover in this conversation, I think I am actually now excited to see Donald attempt this role, because it's not that he can't do it. It's that he hasn't been given the opportunity, in my opinion. And I think this could be a great chance for him to like be kind of smooth and play that younger role.
Now, sci-fi wise too, I just noticed on IMDb that he was in The Martian, and I believe, wasn't he like the computer programmer, like hacker kid?
He was the guy who comes up with the insane scheme because he's super great with numbers.
Yes. So, I mean, he's got that kind of like, you know, pent up barreling energy that he could do. That's a lot like some of Lando's more excitable moments. So that might actually work. He just needs to get the, you know, like he was, like Graham was saying, that more kind of like, hey, ladies, that more smooth kind of edge in there that Lando always had every time you ran into him.
Yeah, he was always talking to the ladies. So as long as he can, I think he can get that, or at least I'm excited to see him attempt it, you know, and his interpretation of that. So
do you think this Glover fits?
Tom Merritt, everybody.
Don't encourage me. numbers reported by Sensor Tower, SurveyMonkey, and Apptopia show that Pokemon Go has declined from 45 million daily users in July to around 30 million in August. Data was presented by Axiom Capital Management to investors to assuage their concerns in the early days of Pokemon Go that it might just steal all the attention from all the other mobile apps they had invested in. Axiom said, "Don't worry, investors, your stocks are safe. Pokemon Go is on the decline." But aside from that, I'm not shocked that Pokemon Go has started to decline, because it was way, way too many people playing it at the beginning for it to maintain that. I'm curious if either one of you guys were out there collecting Pokemon, and if you did, are you still?
I was, I will admit. At first, I wasn't too enthused about it because I wasn't really like a Pokemon kid. Like, I just didn't care when I was a kid. So the interesting thing is a couple of us went out at night walking around and kind of, you know, half-heartedly opened the app and started playing. And before we knew it, an hour had gone by, and it was pretty fun because you can kind of do it as a team and it does involve a lot of walking around. The app itself leads you to landmarks and the different places you're walking. So it is actually really interactive and really fun. The problem I had with it is I don't think the company that created it, which I believe is Niantic, was prepared for it, because so many things have gone wrong with the app. It doesn't function properly. For mine, it updated and then wouldn't let me log back in. And even getting a ticket to them to ask them, hey, what's up, took literally 3 weeks. Mm. So, I mean, I think they maybe can't cope with the amount of people that have been playing it. So as people are gradually having the app not work and it's aggravating for them, they're just kind of like, well, forget it. And the numbers are just dropping, I think, for that reason. I think that's one of the biggest reasons. I don't think it's necessarily become less trendy that fast. I just think it's not working that well. I don't know.
Graham, did you play it at all?
Did not play it. never was into Pokemon on any level. So it really, like, I was trying not to just sound like an old man, like, get off my lawn.
Right? No, literally, stop collecting Pokemon on my lawn.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I was having a hard time understanding it. My girlfriend got really into it because she was into Pokemon, and she told me about it. And then I had my teenage nephews come visit me, and they were all into it. And, you know, I heard the stuff of, like, it's helping with kids being more active and childhood obesity and stuff like that. And I heard businesses that are, I don't know how they did this or whatever, they made a Pokemon thing outside of their business and their business went up and all that. I was like, oh, that's cool. But the thing about it is, and Christy brings up great points, any app, if there's a bunch of bugs in it, it's, I don't care what it is, people are going to go, ah, and they're going to bail on it. And then anything like this, that's this so just out of nowhere trendy, then even if it functions perfectly, you have to keep adding and expanding the, or something. Otherwise they're going to people, some people are going to go on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the thing is, so many people had completed the whole round of stuff. I think you gather something like over 200 Pokemon or whatever. And so many people, you know, just really focused gamers went out there and did that really fast. And they were like, well, what's next? And the company was like, well, we're busy fixing things. We can't add things. Here's a tuft of grass to look at. Isn't that pretty? And people went, well, this is silly. This isn't, it's not as much fun because it's not, the game isn't growing. So yeah, that's exactly right, Grant.
Collecting virtual monsters isn't silly. Walking around in real life looking at my phone all the time isn't silly. But a tuft of grass, that's a bridge too far.
How dare you?
Yeah, it was astonishing to me how it was able to maintain its popularity even with all of the bugs and server issues and everything. And now that they've worked out most of those, Graham, you're absolutely right. It is the, you know, okay, what next in the game? I've done all of the things, and I'm not exactly compelled to keep capturing Zubats and Pidgeys anymore.
And also too, the part of the age group that is older that is like, oh, this is from when I was younger, they're also gonna just, they're not kids. So they're in their whatever, their late 20s or their 30s, and that's cool, and this is fun. But that's the thing about anything retro from any age group. You go, oh, remember that? That was cool. And okay, yeah. And then it's time to get on with my life, you know. that's with anything. So I've done that with stuff like whatever, a retro TV show's back or whatever this, and I go, oh, this is so great. And then I'm... like the new X, when the X Files released whatever those 6 episodes of X Files, I was like, oh, X Files.
Yeah, yeah.
And then halfway through it, I was like, okay, well, they didn't go nuts on the writing. So maybe I'll just move on to something else.
So you didn't finish all 6 either of the X Files?
You know, they had a couple episodes that were quote unquote comedy episodes. And I was like, these are my least favorite. Like, do the crazy, creepy conspiracy stuff.
That's
like,
what I came for. Exactly.
That's what I'm here for. I'm not here for your jokes. You know, like, I'll go watch back episodes of 30 Rock. So,
what, no musical episode either? That's
yeah,
a shame.
Exactly. No, like, Space Man Goes to College. Something like that. Like, it's X-Files Spring Break. Ah.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I didn't quite finish the X-Files, but I guess that mapped to my original watching, which is I was really excited in the early seasons, and I kind of dropped away towards the end, and then came back for the movie. So I guess they could put another movie out and catch me.
Make a Pokemon movie, an interactive movie with people walking around finding Pokemons, and then they get into a real thing, and Pokemon comes to life.
Yeah.
And then that's what they should do.
And then the X-Files have to step in and it's X-Pokemon, the movie.
Pokey-Files.
Pokey-Files.
Excellent. I love that. before we move on to the next one, I just want to ask, because we still have tens of millions of people playing this, even though that there is a steep decline at this point. does it become just that thing that you say, hey, remember back in the summer of 2016 when all everybody was talking about for a month was Pokemon? That was a weird time. Or do you think this thing will stick around as a subculture thing that there are still people playing?
I think answer number one is pretty much what I was thinking, is exactly what you said. That'll be 2 years from now. We'll go, oh, remember that when we wandered around for 3 weeks looking at our phones and then it kind of went away? Yeah.
It'll be a punchline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be in that teens show that they put out in 20 years.
Yeah. It'll be that like, oh, what are you playing Pokemon? Like, it'll be like a slam,
right,
you know,
right,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, what are you doing? The Macarena or something like that. It'll have some kind of thing like that.
Very relevant jokes like Macarena. They kill these days. man. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it will actually still have a subculture. I think both answers might be right, where there'll be a small amount of people still playing it as long as they keep it around, and they will be slammed as the, oh my gosh, you're the guy who still does Macarena classes. Amazing.
Is anybody still playing Angry Birds?
I have no idea.
Let's hear from you, folks. currentgeek@gmail.com. Let us know. We
30 million people is nothing to sneeze at, though, really. I mean, they're saying, oh, it dropped, but that's still a ton of people playing a mobile game.
Yeah. No, that's funny.
Really. So.
All right. In the Marvel Comics, Tony Stark has stepped down as Iron Man. This is not the movies. Don't freak out yet. This is in the print comics. And Iron Man will be handing off the role to Riri Williams, who will call herself Iron Heart. Her story premieres in Invincible Iron Man number one this fall. And Christy, I know you were pretty excited about this.
I just think it's interesting. I'm not a huge fan of recasts, unless it's Doctor Who, because then it actually makes sense. But I was kind of having trouble in the first place with, you know, Iron Man turns into someone else. I just thought that was kind of odd. So to have the name change and kind of develop maybe the philosophies of Iron Man into a new character called Iron Heart, I like that approach. What I wasn't too sure about is the name, because the second I read Iron Heart, I thought of Lionheart, and then I thought of Richard I, so that just didn't make sense to me. And I was looking up some stuff, and I thought Ironess might have been really cool, because Ironess is the stator quality of being iron, and that sounded kind of like Baroness, which leads itself more to like a lady superhero, and I thought, oh, that would be cool. Not that we have any say in any of this, but yeah, the name I think is kind of odd, but I like the concept of the whole thing. I think it's a really good idea.
I mean, should they have gone with Iron Woman? Just straight ahead.
No, and see, that's, I don't like that either. That's just kind of dull,
and
maybe.
And you can't go Iron Lady, because then that's Margaret Thatcher.
Exactly.
Right,
see?
Or Iron Maiden, and then you're a rock band.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I guess Iron Heart. I liked Iron S, but no one listens. So
I think Iron S is actually better than Iron Heart, because when you say Iron Heart, I thought of the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie from the 90s. They scream in the trailer, Lionheart, and he does the splits. So, I kind of agree. I would like it to be Ironess. That's a cool name.
Let's start a campaign. I like it.
All right. I mean, you kind of have to do this in terms of the idea of, and that they're not just like changing it and pretending it didn't happen. They're saying Tony Stark is stepping down and he's handing it over to. I mean, that's interesting, because that would have to happen, and you know, and Tony Stark and Bruce Wayne and these types of people can't live forever. So
yeah,
that's what I mean, though. I like that they changed the mythology to suit the story instead of just kind of making it this invisible changeover where you don't see what happens. It just suddenly happens, and suddenly there's a girl there and you're like, why, what? So yeah, I like the way they structured it. I think that makes sense.
All right, we've got a cloud computing horror story here. TCP was a company that made smart light bulbs, discontinued their servers on June 1st. So the bulbs still work the old-fashioned way. It's not like the light stops working. You can turn them on and off at the switch. You can even still control them over your home Wi-Fi with an app, because they will respond over the local network. But all of the remote functionality, all the programmable stuff, any timers you wanted to set, anything that required a server doesn't work. These things are still on the shelves, by the way. With all of these things on the box that says, yeah, you can control them from anywhere, set them to go on and off on, you know, when the doorbell rings or whatever. None of that stuff works anymore. The FTC is working to get companies to assure that products they buy will keep working, while tech companies are starting to look at standards that will let servers be replaced if a company can't support them anymore. That seems to be the solution to me, is, if you have to go out of business and end your server, open source this stuff. Let somebody step in the gap, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, this bugs me because think about Philips Hue bulbs. What if Philips Hue bulbs just suddenly lost their color capability? I mean, it's like, it just doesn't, then the bulb is just a bulb. It's like having broken handlebars on a bicycle and somebody saying, well, the bicycle still rolls, you're fine. But the whole, you know, it's just like the whole point is gone. And how much were these things anyway? I'm sure they weren't cheap, right? How much was each bulb?
Yeah, no, these things are always in the 80s to 90s of dollars. So yeah, they're way more than you would pay even for an LED bulb that was not smart. So the thing you paid for doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that's poor planning. Just poor planning.
That's always the fear for me of like the brand new technology that's so out there on its own. I'm always like, I gotta wait and see, because if the rest of the market doesn't really jump along with it and there's not competitors, then it's just gonna die and then you're stuck with like Betamax, you know, is my favorite.
The only problem with Betamax was embarrassment, though. Imagine if Betamax meant you couldn't like turn your lights on or something.
Right. And that's the thing too, is then you commit to some piece of technology now that like, I'm always leery of the, it controls everything in your home. You don't have to do anything. Cause then I'm just like, oh, so if it breaks, then I can't open my fridge. Is that like what is?
Right. You know, all my milk spoils because the internet was off. Yeah.
Yeah. So now I have to fight with robots for food. Like a battle is coming.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's going to be a very dystopian home life in the future. That's amazing. There are ways to design these, and in fact, in part, these are okay because yes, you can still control them even from the app within your home network. So they didn't make them so they fail utterly. There's a little bit of graceful degradation here. So yeah, if Nest went away, the Nest thermostat should still be able to control the way an old thermostat would from your wall, but that's not what you pay for these things for. So there should be a standard, whether it's done by companies or whether it's encouraged by the FTC, that just says, hey, let's have an exit strategy if a company needs to leave, where the users won't just lose half the functionality and have to fight robots to get to their frozen chicken.
And that's the thing. It's like, is there any regulation for this at all that's existing already where they say that you have to follow through? Or does the company just kind of say, oh, well, we messed up. Sorry. Bye. And you're stuck.
Caveat emptor.
Yeah. Sure.
That's sort of a bummer.
Yeah.
That's the downside of the tech.
Speaking of the tech, something that sounds very much like the tech is the Tick. And the Tick is back for the third time on television. The Tick. This time, making a go on Amazon as one of its potential new shows. They put up three pilots this past week. One of them is The Tick, starring... Do you say his name Peter Serafinovich? Is that right?
Sounds right.
Sure. I'm the worst at pronouncing.
We'll accept that answer.
That worked.
Yep.
Griffin Newman's in it. Valerie Curry's in it. It's directed by Wally Pfister, who was the cinematographer on all the Dark Knight movies. Batman Begins, Dark Knight, etc. So he's in the director's chair for this. Written by Ben Edlund. And if you recognize that, it could be because he wrote for Firefly and Angel and Supernatural. He's written for a lot of TV shows. But he also wrote for the last two Tick TV series, the one in 1996 and the one in 2001.
Awesome.
I think Amazon is maybe the perfect place for this type of show because, you know, it was sort of a cult hit and then the networks kind of goofed around with it or whatever. And I feel like there's this sort of Tick fan base that is very sort of small but mighty. I mean, I know that's like, well, it's the Tick, but it's and I think
they're kind of blood-sucking and they dig under your skin.
Yeah, take care of diseases. We know what we're talking about. But I feel like the people that loved that show and even younger audiences that might have heard about it or have watched it some other place, I think when it's on this format, which is they're going to go, yep, and I could be 1,000% wrong. This could just be like a Wi-Fi light bulb that ends up dying. But it seems like this could be the kind of thing where Amazon, you know, goes, hey, the Tick is doing crazy numbers for us and everybody loves it because everything is getting more and more on demand. And That's my feeling on this. I could be 1,000% wrong, but the people involved in it, I'm confident in their abilities, and if they get the tone right, and they're given the other thing too about the streaming platforms like Amazon and Hulu and Netflix, their creative freedom is amazing, and that's part of why so many of their shows just do great, because there isn't this language and material. Oh, you can't talk about that. There's none of that hanging over it or restricting it. So you get really great programming out of those shows.
I think you get more eclectic programming too, because they're allowed to be, as you said, they don't have as many restrictions. So, you know, even just putting, you know, a difficult language aside or whatever, they can try kind of more quirky, weird things. And I think The Tick definitely falls into the quirky category. I mean, the last Tick I saw was the animated one, which I think had like one of the monkeys in it or something as one of the voices. So with this guy having worked on Supernatural and Firefly, I think it's got really good potential.
Well, and I probably didn't make it clear, but Ben Edlund is also the creator of the comic, right? So
this
is the guy who is going to make The Tick work. What's interesting is even though he has been involved in these other TV versions, I loved the one in the 90s. The one in the 2000s kind of left me a little dry. So I was very happy to watch this pilot and be like, okay, this is what I liked about The Tick. It's a different take from the 90s one. It's even a little less cartoony.
So did you like the animated one? Is that the one that you enjoyed?
It was all right. I didn't love it. Yeah. I just, that one in the 90s really hit what I liked about this niche comic. And so I feel like they're capturing that again a little more. I'm glad Edlund has been involved in all of these though, because at least I feel like they're trying to stay true to that
consistent
gestalt. Yeah,
and I think what's going to happen, and again I don't know specifically, but my just seeing from the pattern of like what Amazon has put out there and the other streaming services, I think Ben Edlund is going to be given the creative leeway to do what his true vision of The Tick is, and the budget. And that's not to say big budgets always make great things, obviously, because look, Suicide Squad just happened. But I think the right combination of creative freedom and enough of a budget, like not super restrictive, and also all of the other things we've talked about, content and everything, he's going to be able to make it a really interesting and go into what it was as a comic book.
Yeah. He won't run up against something where he's like, I really need to do this, and the studio won't give him the money.
Right. So, or the network is saying, I can't have this subject matter in this one episode or whatever. Yeah. It's not going to come across any of that.
Well, because the biggest advantage of Amazon and Netflix and Hulu is they don't need big ratings. They don't need to appeal to a mass. They just need to keep subscribers. And as long as they can look at these numbers and go, yeah, we got a bunch of people who are watching this, who are, you know, who are maintaining their subscription, that's all they care about.
You know, that's actually a really good point. I hadn't thought about that, because Netflix and Amazon Prime are just such blanket ways to consume media that it doesn't come down to one exact show making, oh, you know, the network's going to implode or collapse on itself because these one or two shows failed. So, yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
They just need content. They need a constant flow of new content, and they also need content that they own, because the license fees on pre-existing content can be problem. They're nice, but they're usually pretty expensive. And then also a lot of times those license agreements run out. Whereas they produce and own it. That's what Netflix is, just making their own stuff, because they lost so much content through all these license deals expiring that they went, well, we're not going to get into that game anymore. And that's why they're producing amazing shows like Daredevil and Orange is the New Black and, you know, Maria Bamford, Lady Dynamite, and on and on. I'm like Luke Cage. I'm so fired. I saw Luke Cage trailer
great.
At Comic-Con. I'm like, dude, I'm in. So that's what I'm excited.
Well, yeah, and I'm right there with you, because there are things in that back catalog that I haven't seen yet that I mean to go back and watch. And when I think about HBO, once I got HBO Go, I went back and I watched Rome and I watched Deadwood. Those were ones that I had missed and I knew were good. But I pretty quickly ran out of the stuff that they had that I was super interested in. Whereas Netflix and Amazon both keep adding these things in. I want to go back and watch Mozart in the Jungle. I've watched a couple episodes of it, and then I keep getting distracted. But it's that peak television thing, right? There's just more good things than you have time for.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks to everybody.
People keep...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh no, people keep saying that, you know, Netflix is they don't have as much content on as they used to. People were complaining that the amount of movies and shows is dropping off, but I think it's quality more than quantity for me, because I, you know, if it's just a bunch of junky, not even B movies, but C and D movies that I'm not going to watch, that can be numbers, but it's not things that anybody's going to want to watch. So
yeah.
It is a little bit of a change for Netflix subscribers to say, oh, I don't go there to find a huge back catalog of movies and old TV shows as much as I go to find really interesting stuff that I wouldn't have known about or wouldn't have existed because Netflix, it's a Netflix original.
Also, Netflix greatest numbers, I mean, they're very tight about it, but their greatest numbers have come from the runaway episodic hits like Orange is the New Black and House of Cards and stuff like that. So that's where they're like, oh, let's just put it all into that.
Yeah. Well, I'm starting to find things, you know, it used to be like, ooh, Netflix has a show and everybody talks about it because it's the show. They're releasing stuff so fast, you don't hear about it, especially because they have all the international versions. My friend Patrick Beja tipped me off to Terrace House, which was a Japanese reality show that I guess had been on regular television and Netflix brought it back. And it's just, I mean, it's very Japanese. It's
right.
You know, it's very weird. I had not had any idea that this was a Netflix original. And so I was like, wow, there's just so much in there. You're going to start thinking of Netflix as a library of Netflix content as much as a place for back catalog.
Right.
Yeah, agreed. Exactly.
Want to thank all of our subreddit folks who help us figure out what stories we're going to talk about every week. Another Jay Martin, Chris Stivers, Strike It Rich One, Jeff Rose, Captain Kipper, and Fritz Krieg were among the folks that submitted stories that we used today. So thank you very much. Get in there and vote, people. CurrentGeek.reddit.com. All right. I want to take a moment to talk with our guests today before we quiz them about what's going on in their lives. Christy, of course, you can follow at ChristyCates.com, but you are doing a great job with Music Mondays. I think people need to know about this because I tell you, I watch it and I learn a ton of things about music, some of which I would have never known. Some of things are folks that I bands that I care about, but I didn't know what was going on with them.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you, Tom. Yeah, I've got over 10 years in writing music for a different bunch of different magazines, Electronic Musician and Remix, and, you know, some regional stuff as well. So as a musician, too, which is the, you know, my primary thing that I do, I just like all music. So for me, it's a fun way to kind of share what's going on in the music world. And we break it down, you know, we talk about albums that are coming out and who's on tour and what kind of festivals are going on. And it's just a fun way to kind of share the music news, and it's broken down with fun pictures of stuff. And I think it's pretty fun to watch. I hope we're trying to make it fun to watch. So that's on every Monday night at 6 on Eastern time on diamondclub.tv.
Yeah. You can go to diamondclub.tv or subscribe to Christy's YouTube channel. Then you get Music Mondays plus some music videos. You had recently posted a new one of those as well.
Yeah. I'm hoping to record an EP next year of my own original music. So I'm posting some singles, which are original songs that I've written, and then also just a bunch of covers for fun, just because it's fun to play songs that you enjoy to play. So yeah, there's that on there too. So I'm on there, ChristyCates.com. My YouTube is also ChristyCates, and I'm super active on Twitter. So come on and say hi at any of those places.
It's all K's too.
It
Christy
is all K's.
K, Kate's with
yep.
K. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. You do a great job with the visuals on the Music Monday. It gives me the feeling of an old MTV music update, but without feeling dated like that. It's like you've done the modern version of that. It's awesome.
Thank you. That was the intention. So thanks. I appreciate that.
Fantastic. And Graham, obviously comedy film nerds going strong and doing well. But you and Chris both have got the LA Podfest coming up.
Yeah, so Chris Mancini, myself, and then another podcaster, Dave Anthony, started LA Podfest. This is our fifth year. It's September 23rd through the 25th. We've got over 40 live podcasts, like really solid ones. We've got Criminal. We've got Welcome to Night Vale. We just added guest DJ Project from KCRW, and Bill Hader is going to be their guest. My Favorite Murder, Aisha Tyler, a bunch of funny comedians, and then it's a three-day event at the Sofitel in Beverly Hills. It's super fun. It's to see all your favorite podcasts live. And then we do a live video. We live stream it, a pay-per-view. So for $25, you can watch the whole festival on your laptop or smartphone or whatever. And then we archive all the shows that you can watch the whole festival for 30 days after. So use two things you can get for $25. And then, but if you use coupon code CFN, you save $5 and you can watch everything for 20. So yeah, LA Podfest, it's in a month. It's so much fun. And it's a crazy amount of work, but it's I'm like sure, it to throw man. Like a 3-day party comedy reunion thing with a bunch of podcast fans and comedians and stuff. It's a blast.
You guys have too much good stuff every year. And so I'm really glad that you do that live streaming because yes, if you're in LA, you should definitely try to head over to the Sofitel and experience it in person. But even if you do, you're not going to be able to see everything. So having those archive videos, or if you're not in LA, being able to just kind of sit back and, you know, eat Cheetos and watch the thing while it's happening is as good, if not in some ways better experience because you get to soak it all in.
Yeah, and anytime you're in your underwear eating fast food, you know, I mean, it's really it's exciting for everybody. So it's
but yeah, as long as that video's only one way. That's all.
Yeah, I don't know, just on that. I appreciate that. You know, live your own life, but but yeah, it's a cool thing because what we've noticed is fans that come to the live event go, oh, I'll just buy the live stream because I'll watch the archive of a show I couldn't see. Because you can't, like you said, you can't see all 40 shows. It's been a really cool thing. And then a lot of the podcasts do special stuff visually because all the shows are, of course, recorded.
Sure.
And then there you can listen to them as an audio podcast like you normally would through iTunes or Stitcher or something like that. But then you also get to watch stuff. So people like Comedy Film Nerds, we always show movie trailers and talk about them, which, you know, you could kind of, you can follow along listening, but it's a lot better visually.
And you guys not only have the like stunning lineup of podcasts, but also some panels, which you were nice enough to invite me last year and again this year to host the panel. And those are things that otherwise wouldn't be put out as a podcast. So you're getting people from, you know, Rooster Teeth and Hulu and all kinds of places to come together and kind of share a little knowledge about how all this works.
Well, the thing, you know, our festival was started by three podcasters, and it's a show, it's a festival by podcasters for podcast fans. And we realize some podcast fans also either are or want to do their own podcast. And many of them are like, you know, they're not in show business. And they're like, what do I do? And so we have people, you know, now there's a podcast industry and there's people that work in this podcast industry. And so in addition to the 40 shows, there's six panels. You're on one of them, and it's you get to hear everything, how to monetize, the equipment to use, like really interesting stuff. And again, we record all those. We release them as podcasts, and also you can watch those on the live video stream. You can watch them live or in the video archive for 30 days after. So we really want to make it as informative as possible, but also we do the podcast lab. And that's where smaller shows can come, bring their recording equipment, and get interviews with anyone they can grab. And so we've had shows, like some shows, you know, they do a little show in like whatever, Iowa, and they fly to LA, and then they get interviews with all these big name comedians and actors and showbiz people that they would never normally get. And I just love that we're able to provide that, you know?
Oh, that's great. Yeah. No, it's a great organization. It's a great conference that you guys are putting together. So thank you for letting me be a small part of it. And I highly encourage folks to check it out, lapodfest.com. If you're in the area or you can get to the area and you come out, which I highly encourage you to do, come say hi. I'll be around on that Sunday afternoon for my panel. I'll probably be around earlier in the week as well.
Yeah. And then of course, yeah, come see Tom and the panel, see the other shows. Sunday night, we have a big closing night party. So don't we're going to try that. To get Tom, there's live band karaoke. So if I can get Tom to sing Hooked on a Feeling or something of that nature, then I think it's a win for everybody. So get your song ready, Tom.
Blue
you got a month.
Or Mac Davis, Hooked on a Feeling.
I go Mac Davis. I go on. Yeah, see, I'm a big Mac Davis.
Yeah, that's that. You're from Illinois, right? Yeah, we do the Mac Davis version. Maybe if Christy comes out and sings, then I'll let her sing loudly over me.
Oh,
so it sounds good.
See, we need an actual singer musician to show up instead of just a bunch of drunk comedians and podcast fans yelping into microphones.
No, man, it sounds like a blast. Cannot
it does.
Wait. Also, another shoe to drop, by the way. I didn't tell Graham I was going to do this, but I just thought of it because I had been on the Comedy Film Nerds podcast about a month ago now, right before Ghostbusters came out. And I said, if you guys remember, I said on the show that I didn't think it was as bad as the pre-press was making it sound. Did you get a chance to see it?
I did, and I could not agree with you more. I think it was I think it was really funny. There was like a couple little like kind of bathroom jokes in the beginning, and I was like, oh man, I hope it's not all this. It isn't. It's smart. It's funny. It's a, you know, the cast does a great job. And honestly, the only, I'm not a big 3D movie fan, but the only showing I could see, I was on the road, that was available to me was a 3D one. I was like, all right, fine. The 3D, the big ghost fight blow up at the end in 3D actually enhances the movie. It's one of the few times where the 3D helps tell the story, because now ghosts are flying out of the screen into my head. You know, it's, so it was really, I was like dodging and stuff in my chair, and I thought it was hilarious. And all of the people that were like all mad, first of all, you know, as I will quote Leonard Maltin, he was like, it's just a movie, you know, and, you know, why does it have to be all women and blah, blah, blah. You know, I understand when I first heard, oh, we're doing a remake of a comedy. I always go, uh-oh, that's my first instinct, but it was done well. And, you know, McCarthy's hilarious. I mean, all of the Kristen Wiig's hilarious.
They're really funny people.
I mean, it's a funny cast, and I really dug it. I was like, if anyone that's so mad about it, I think give it a chance. I mean, it was a funny film. And the problem it had, and we talk about this a lot on Comedy Film Nerds, so many studios do not know how to cut a comedy trailer. Mm-hmm. And the trailer was the worst part about that film. The trailer kind of made you go, oh man, I saw the trailer, I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be funny. And the jokes in the trailer, they didn't do the jokes justice. Those same jokes in the full movie, in the context of the scene and in the context of the whole film, I was like, oh, well, that is now a funny joke. And in the way they cut it in the trailer, it just looks like, eep, boink, dink, you know, like bumping into walls.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They do so many mistakes with trailers. But this movie, if anyone hasn't seen it, I would say go see it, and see it in 3D. And I don't normally recommend 3D movies.
Yeah, I didn't see it in 3D, and that ghost fight did not play as well. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Christy, did you get a chance to see it?
I did not see it. I'm sorry.
Now you know.
I know.
Go see it.
Now you know.
Before it's too late, especially because I have it in the movie draft, so it's
that's true. Help the underdog. Go see it.
All right, real quickly, folks, thank you for supporting Current Geek through our Crate Joy. If you want access to exclusive stickers, some exclusive stories that I write, we get things from our guests that pop in there sometimes, like books, head to frogpants.cratejoy.com. Now it's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
I guess the way Scott does that is he plays it back to back. I kind of expected it to just keep going. So this is our pop quiz. The way it works is we've got 5 questions for each of our guests in an area of their expertise. If they get it right, you'll hear this. If they get it wrong, you'll hear this. And here we go. We're going to start with you, Christy Cates. Your quiz topic is Stargate SG-1. Is that appropriate?
Yes, I love that show.
You're a big fan. All right.
Don't be ashamed, Christy.
Here we go.
Oh, boy. It doesn't mean I'm going to be an expert, but I like it. I'll just put a disclaimer in there.
Your first question is, what year did Stargate SG-1 premiere? What year? It would be a year.
95.
Gregorian 90, calendar.
96.
Thank you for the clarification.
1997?
Well done. Yes, exactly.
Oh, yay!
Yeah. So congratulations. You're 1-for-1. I don't know that I'll be able to score it the way I normally do. We'll see. Question number 2. Who played Daniel Jackson in Stargate SG-1?
Daniel Jackson was Michael Shanks.
Yes, it was, in fact. 2 out of 2. Question number 3. What is the name of the first and second episodes of Stargate SG-1? I'll give you a hint. It's
the
one,
first one. Okay, the
one
first
name.
One.
It's parts 1 and 2. So it's the name of the They broke it open.
Children of the Gods. Is that how you're doing that?
Well done. Yes.
Yay.
Absolutely right. Question number four. How many seasons of Stargate SG-1 were produced?
Oh, gosh. I want to say 9 or 10.
You want to say 9 or do you want to say 10?
I want to say the one that's correct.
Which one is that again?
10.
Yes.
Around
You're on your way. Question number 5. Final question. Who played Samantha Carter in SG-1?
Samantha Carter is Amanda Tapping.
Yes, indeed it is. Well done.
Wow.
That is a perfect score of 5.
Wow. That was unexpected.
Congratulations. We're scoring as we go, which we don't normally do. Graham, are you prepared now?
No, I'm not. She went 5 for 5. I don't feel very prepared at all.
Well,
I didn't expect it, Graham. Don't worry.
Normally, Scott's doing the questions, and I am scoring them. I will try my best to score them properly. And as Christy knows, you don't always have to get them right to get a point for the scoring. So here we go. Question number 1 in your surfing trivia quiz. Is that an appropriate topic? Are you a surfer, Graham?
Yes, I am.
All right, here we go. Number 1, Ron John Surf Shop operates the largest surfing shop in the world. Where is the Ron John Surf Shop located?
I believe that's West Palm Beach, Florida.
You get half a point. No, you get a full point because you believe that it is West Palm Beach, Florida. But in fact, it's,
no, it's Cocoa Beach.
You get the point. There you go.
All right. Cocoa Beach.
Question number 2. Which professional surfer was featured in the PlayStation 2 video game? That person's name, Pro Surfer.
Kelly Slater.
Yes, indeed. It was, in fact, Kelly Slater. Get a little speed bonus there as well. Question number 3. Where does the surfing movie Blue Crush take place?
The North Shore of Oahu.
Yes, indeed. Another speed bonus. Well done. Question number 4. Where is the Quicksilver Pro Tour held?
Quicksilver Pro Tour is held in Oahu as well.
Australia?
Oh, man, maybe that is Australia.
Were you just mispronouncing Australia? Because it sounded like you said Oahu.
Yeah, I said Australia.
With your speed bonuses, though, you're still 4 for 4. Question number 5, your final question. What Hawaiian island is the Banzai Pipeline located in?
That would be Oahu.
Yes, indeed. Another perfect 5.
Christy won that.
If you have to have a tiebreaker, obviously Christy did not need speed bonuses to win, so she would get the edge in advance were this tournament play. But well done to both of you. That is our pop quiz. All right, we're going to finish up here with a little forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
This is a segment of our show where one of us will make a crazy prediction and we'll bat that around for a little bit before we wrap things up. I threw one out here because someone was telling me, I'm about to head off to Japan and Korea for a couple of weeks, and someone was telling me today that in Japan, the taxi drivers will use these arm extensions to open and close the door without having to get out of the seat. Have you guys ever seen that before?
No.
They've got the have Graham. So it's like a robotic arm kind of.
Yeah, the backseat doors are basically on a robotic arm. So the car just pulls up and then everything in Japan is automated. It's either 1,000 years old or it's automated.
Yeah. So that got me thinking. I think robotic extensions to even what is now considered normal bodies. So obviously this will be for people with disabilities or injuries, but also for just folks who want it cosmetically, will become common by the year 2041. Old people like us, by 2041, will resist getting ports while all the kids get them installed and can snap extra arms and legs on and off at will, and really expensive models can morph into multiple tools without even having to swap them out.
I don't want to end up like that dead Neo fellow in that Matrix movie. That was ridiculous.
That's definitely me. Like that. Yeah, in 2041. you kids with your ports.
I'd be shocked if I'm still alive at that point. But If I am, I guess the only way I would be okay with those things if it allowed me to continue to surf. If I could still surf, then I would
maybe
I would
that's
take
it.
Those.
Okay, maybe you're alive because of these things. First of all, you know, you've got your USB add-on liver.
Yeah. Pancreas.
Yeah.
Bluetooth heart. Okay.
And then it's all waterproof so that you can go out, you know, and not only surf, but you get like a couple extra arms.
Well, yeah, then I'm all for it. You know, I'm cool with being some sort of Terminator surf, you know, as long as I can still surf and feel what it's like, I guess I'm in. I don't know.
I'll be totally honest. When I think about this, I want the ability that it would give me. I would not be against having like an extra pair of robotic limbs that could help me do whatever, right? Maybe I want to start rock climbing or something. But having a port surgically embedded into me is where I'm going to, that's where I think I'm going to be the guy going, I don't know if I want that. And all the kids were like, oh, come on. It's real fast. It's easy. Nobody gets an infection hardly ever. It's great. You should totally do it.
I guess in the future, that would be kind of like getting your ears pierced. You know what I mean? Yes, like it would be that level of like, oh, whatever. Right now it sounds creepy. Maybe by then it wouldn't be creepy.
Or
I mean, I could.
It's like LASIK.
I don't know. It's like, yeah, exactly. That sounded kind of awful when that first came out too. So extra legs. You could extra super tall legs like stilts. That would be kind of cool.
See, now you're getting into it. Yeah.
the big assumption we're making here is that society will have not collapsed and we're not just killing each other for cannibal food. So as long as it's not like The Road where there's cannibalism, then I think, yeah, this could be a wonderful thing.
Where you need your port arm because someone ate your other arm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other way this could go, right? Is not for fun and recreation. It's for warfare in the post-apocalyptic universe in which we all live.
Yeah, but the fun and recreation angle, I think, is almost more interesting because what if it became a fashion thing as well? Like you polka dotted arm and a purple arm and your red pant arm.
Of course.
And you'd like have them. You know what I mean? Or like different shapes on the bottom, like clown shoes on the bottom.
Did you see Scott was wearing a polka dot arm with a striped leg? Like, it's just not done.
Well, I mean, fashion victim. Hello.
Yeah.
Well, let's not outlaw. Let's not get rid of the fact that maybe recreation and sport could be using these robotic arms or whatever to hunt people in a post-apocalyptic nightmare. Do you know what I'm saying? Just like that could be a fun sport.
The most dangerous Olympic game. This leads me to, I'm totally going off the reservation here, but I have often felt that at some point we are just going to give up on fighting enhancements in sports. And we'll just create a league for people. Like, yeah, you want to do whatever to give yourself an advantage. Great, you're in the super league, and you go play over there. There's the natural league, and now there's the super league. And if you want to add robotic arms or try to pump up your muscles, go for it.
Just as long as the games are good and there's good ratings on on the championship, then who cares?
Let's sign this waiver.
All in the name of entertainment, perhaps.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm waiting for that day to finally come. All right. Well, that is it for this episode of Current Geek. Thank you both for being here and having a great conversation. This was really fun.
Glad to be
Thank
here.
Thank you, Tom.
Christy Cates, remind people again where they can find what you do online.
Everything is at christycates.com. It's KristiKates. I'm super active on Twitter. Please come say hello to me on Twitter. Twitter is super fun and I like it. Also, a new music series on YouTube and Monday Music News on diamondclub.tv every Monday.
Go subscribe, follow, do all the things. Graham Elwood, of course, comedyfilmnerds.com, lapodfest.com. Anything else to tell folks about?
Yeah, you could go to grahamelwood.com or my Twitter handle is at Graham Elwood on Instagram and Twitter. Our documentary, Earbuds, the podcasting documentary feature film, is doing festivals right now and will be out very soon. So follow me on any of these social medias and you'll get more of that information. And of course, Comedy Film Nerds is a weekly movie podcast. We just did our 334th episode. So
hey, congratulations. That's fantastic.
Check that out.
Yeah, and I'm excited for earbuds too because I was a backer on Kickstarter, so I'm
really excited, man.
To see that go. Yeah.
Cool.
It'll be out soon.
Woohoo! All right, keep an eye out for it, folks. Don't forget, Andrew Allen is the person who made us our lovely theme music. Alpha Geek Radio provides our live audio stream. You can call us and leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. Follow us at Current Geek on Twitter. We're currentgeek.reddit.com, currentgeek@gmail.com, and currentgeek.com. For me, for Scott, for Graham and Christy, we'll see you next week.